Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast. I'm Doug Krisner. You can join Brian Curtis and myself for the stories making news and moving markets in the APAC region. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Well, South Korea's economic growth accelerated to a pace faster than most optimistic forecasts had been around. Good news to President Yoon Suk-yeol. A bit late, though, given the election setback. But anyway, GDP advancing 1.3% in the 3 months through March versus the previous quarter, according to the Bank of Korea. The economy grew 3.4% year on year, beating the forecast of 2.5%. Now, in that environment, SK Hynix said it expects full recovery in the memory market in chips, and also that AI demand was spurring the chip maker to its fastest revenue expansion since at least 2010. Joining us now for some discussion is Yuk-Kyung Lee, Bloomberg Asia Stocks reporter, on a closer look at Hynix here. So I guess the best news here really for general investors would be that at least this company expects full recovery in the memory market.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the best news is also might be the best opportunity to sell the news. And that's how the markets are seem to be interpreting the latest positive string of announcement from SK Hynix. The company reported a blowout earnings, yes. And that demonstrates that the chip industry is in full recovery after years of slump and downturn. And thanks to this this strong demand coming from the AI, and not just the AI, some of the silver lining that SK Hynix highlighted also included forecasting bullish demand for traditional memory chip, which means that the demand for smartphone and personal computer might be also finally recovering going toward the end of this year. There were a lot of positive announcements from the company from today's earnings results.
Yeah, you might talked about kind of buy the rumor, sell the news. Yesterday, the stock was up by more than 5%. So when we look at the memory chip market, I mean, if the company says to you, maybe we are entering a full recovery cycle, are they taking into consideration what the competitors are dealing with right now? Or is this pretty much from the company's point of view?
So when you talk about that in the memory chip, they are definitely taking into account what the competitors are doing. There's pretty much three memory chip supplier in the world when it comes to DRAM, the majority of the memory chip. There's Samsung Electronics, there's SK Hynix, and there's the U.S. company Micron Technology. And all three of them have been reporting pretty bad results last year, but all three of them are expected to report pretty solid earnings this year, and that's thanks to the industry-wide recovery that's helping the memory chip demand for all these three companies.
The announcement this week that Hynix would spend $15 billion in South Korea on a new plant, what does that actually mean for the company?
Sure. So that displays strong confidence coming from SK Hynix that is pretty confident there will be strong demand for its high-end memory chip called HBM that is crucial for AI accelerators such as the ones made by NVIDIA. So that was a really a kind of type of news that may be seen as a positive, but also for some investors, typically the memory chip industry is very vulnerable to the supply supply and demand situation. So the upcoming increase in supply could also be a negative news to some investors, because that could raise concern about potential supply, although that may be a lot down on the road. So this is not all the positive good news. There's also some source of worry.
Brian was talking about that positive print on GDP. Walkabout economics time, Yuk-Yung. How is the South Korean economy performing? You're in the capital, right? You have kind of a viewpoint on what's happening in a major urban center, but you're very much wired into other pockets of the country and where manufacturing sites are set up for things like not only semiconductors, but automobiles as well. How is the economy performing in South Korea?
So the South Korean economy is very sensitive to global trades and global demand, especially the global demand for the tech and consumer electronics, because chips account for a huge part of the South Korea's exports. And today's growth results also show pretty strong export growth from the chip makers, that is helping the growth for the entire nation. However, this may not be entirely great news for the stock investors, because we are also seeing speculations that the central bank in South Korea, Bank of Korea, may be considering delaying its own rate cuts because the economy is doing well. This is just like what's happening in the U.S. and the Fed may postpone its rate cut to the later this year. And that may also widen the interest rate gap between the U.S. and South Korea. So the South Korean central bank may not be reducing interest rate as soon as investors expected. So the GDP is not all good news.
That may not be a bad thing. I mean, there are some of us who believe that no rate cuts at all is actually the most bullish move for central banks this year, just in that once you start getting the cuts, it's usually because growth has turned down or unemployment has started to move up. This is a pretty good environment that we're in. If you look at the stock chart of Hynix, it's amazing from the lower left to the upper right. Noting, though, that it did sell off 10% before yesterday's big bounce on the CapEx move. And like you said at the very beginning, and I'd like to hear more thoughts on this, maybe the best is already in.
Sure. So if you look at the earnings outlook and the fundamentals of SK Hynix, there may be more legs for the rally in the share prices, which is hovering near the highest level in 24 years. And you see the similar movements in the share prices of other chip makers, NVIDIA, TSMC, Samsung. They are either near their peaks or breaking their peaks. And then in recent weeks, they've been falling more than 10% into the correction level.
So that's why this season is going to be really interesting to see whether or not the earnings are strong enough to get everybody powered higher. Yuk-Yung Lee joins us, Bloomberg Asia stocks reporter from Seoul. We're joined by Fanchuk Wan, Asia CIO of HSBC Global Private Banking and Wealth, to take a closer look at markets. And we have had a lot of up and down here of late. We talked about the big drop in Meta shares today, but we also had Texas Instruments surging, Tesla surging. We also had gains in Visa. So it's very much day in and day out, a different picture on how the equity market might be performing. I suppose a lot of that is tied up into the individual companies and what they're doing, and also the forecast on interest rates. I note that you believe that the big central banks are on track to start cutting interest rates this year. You're sticking by that?
Yeah, we still expect developed market central banks will start with the monetary easing cycle later this year. But of course, market repricing for slower Fed rate cuts have gone quite far. And now to the point that now market actually push out the rate cut expectation in the U.S. Towards the Q4 this year, and some forecasts project no rate cut. We think this have gone too far. So at HSBC, we currently still expect 3 U.S. interest rate cuts this year, but the risks are clearly skewed towards a later start. So we may see the Fed cuts to come in the second half of the year as compared with our current projection of a June start. So we think the repricing have already taken place. And importantly, we think there's very high probability that the European Central Bank will kickstart with monetary easing in June. And there's also debate whether there would be another July rate cut. So with the interest rate cycle turning, we still think that is important for investor to put in cash to work because investment, risky asset, should deliver better total return compared with cash when central bank are now reversing the monetary cycle.
Ms. Fon, I want to ask about
you on, Doug.
Yeah, well, I want to, there's a couple of things there. One, I mean, if the ECB begins to ease, then maybe risk assets in Europe are a buy. But I'm also, as long as we're talking about central bank action, curious on the Bank of Japan's decision, which is happening Friday. What's your sense of what's going on, not only with the economy in Japan and the rate of inflation, but whether or not it's an opportune time to put more money to work in Japanese equities?
Yeah, we are bullish on Japanese equity, so we stay overweight on Japanese stock. We don't think the BOJ will further increase interest rate in this week's meeting. But given the growing expectation for slower Fed rate cuts, and this also created room for the BOJ to raise interest rate earlier than expected. So currently we expect the BOJ will likely raise interest rate again in the third quarter of this year. And we project two more rate hike in 2025. And given the significant weakness in the yen, and now yen hits more than three decades low, so the BOJ would also have the incentive to raise policy rate before the end of this year, and this would also help to curb the extreme weakness in the yen.
What do you like most about what Japanese companies bring to the table at the moment?
I think more sustainable reflation trend in Japan would bode well for corporate earnings outlook. And the Japanese equity market is substantially exposed to the tech upcycle, given the global AI investment boom is also driving strong capital expenditure spending in Japan on digitalization, automation, and AI technology to mitigate the structural headwinds from aging demographic. So Japan is also a very attractive play on the AI investment boom. And on the other hand, the accelerating corporate governance reforms also prompt more listed companies to introduce corporate actions to enhance shareholders' value, including increase in dividend payout and share buyback. So this will bode well for ROE enhancement in the medium term. So there are actually multiple drivers to support equity market in Japan.
Ms. Fon, so much of what happens in the APAC region is driven by economic activity in China. We know that. And clearly the economy is struggling. We're waiting for some type of turn. Maybe it's happened, and we won't know that clearly for a few months now. What's your sense on China and whether or not there are opportunities to put capital to work there?
We currently have neutral allocation to China equities, but we adopt a more selective positioning, given that the recovery outlook remains divergent. So the property market stress remains a key drag on the economy. But looking at the Q1 China GDP report, infrastructure spending actually came in better than expected. On the other hand, industrial production growth and retail sales actually came in weaker than consensus estimates. So this is clearly a mixed picture in terms of the recovery outlook. So this would imply divergent corporate earnings performance. So we see more resilient financial performance from the service consumption sector.
So you have to be a stock picker, is what you're saying. Right?
And focus on the resilient sector.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go back to a comment you made at the beginning of our conversation, which I think a lot of people would take heart from. I mean, they would say you're right, that right now there's the risk of fewer interest rate cuts than more. And so as a money manager, you have to be very cognizant of that. So that would augur for being pretty careful here. Yet you said that you think it's a great time to take advantage, put money to work in the stock market. How do you reconcile those two thoughts?
Yeah, we actually don't think a slower start of the Fed rate cut is a negative development, because the key reason accounting for this trend is stronger than expected U.S. growth. And this has been reflected in earnings expectation. We expect market projection for U.S. earnings growth to further improve. So this will actually support further broadening of the U.S. equity rally, in our opinion.
All right. Thanks very much, Ms. Fanchuk Wan there, Asia CIO of HSBC, Global Private Banking and Wealth.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Masa Takeda, portfolio manager of the Hennessy Japan Fund. We talked about a number of issues that we would raise with you, Masa Takeda. Thank you very much for being with us. Let's start off with possible intervention. Would it be a little weird for the Ministry of Finance to intervene in these 2 days when the BOJ is meeting?
Well, it's hard to say what and when the BOJ might do something. But I do think that Chief JPY, Japanese yen, is here to stay because of several reasons, such as real interest rates still negative for Japanese yen. I think it's one of the few currencies, if not the only one, with negative interest rates. And also trade balance that has structurally changed in the last 20 years. So there's so much less yen purchase nowadays.
So tomorrow, it's not just the BOJ meeting, although that's clearly center stage. Tokyo April CPI data. And I'm curious, can you help me understand what the inflation story is right now in Japan?
Well, so it's been trending above 2% for, I think, the last 2 years now. And initially in 2022, I thought that Japanese inflation would be transient. But as time went by, I came to realize that there's a little more structural element to it. So at first it was the Fed raising rates and depreciated Japanese yen and increased import prices. But now it seems like the baton is being passed to more structural reasons like, labor shortage arising from shrinking population. So our feeling is that Japan's inflation will stay higher for longer.
Yeah, and with inflation high and the currency weak, they kind of feed off each other, I suppose. And it's not good for people. I mean, you probably heard me say Japan Airlines CEO Mitsuko Tottori said it's a big problem. Who is it the most big, the problem? Who is it the biggest for?
Well, definitely households are feeling the pinch. And also, importers. But I think, as Japan is now finally coming out of decades-long deflation, I think this should start a virtual cycle where you have higher inflation, which leads to higher interest rate, nominal interest rate, while the overall monetary policy is still being accommodative, and that should change the consumer's mindset, and that should produce a positive feedback loop. So I think the trend, we're generally moving in the right direction.
So what does it mean, Masa, for the equity market in Japan?
Well, obviously, if you have negative interest rates, that's good for equities. Although, as an investor, we always focus on companies with durable economic modes with strong pricing power, and so we are macro agnostic and benchmark agnostic.
So some of the governance changes that people speak so highly of for Japan, things like being able to offer dividends and allowing more buybacks and making better governance decisions, is that something that you see can be sustainable?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the key thing is not the shareholder return policies. I think that it's about raising awareness around returns on capital, cost of equity, and so on. Because there was no capitalism in a Western sense, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And now with the government initiatives and activists and even Mr. Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway, I think companies are becoming more and more conscious about improving capital efficiency. And I think that's sustainable thanks to all these external pressures.
Masa, we have talked on this show a great deal about how companies are diversifying manufacturing and supply chain operations away from China, reshoring of semiconductor manufacturing, let's say, here in the United States. How is Japan benefiting from this drive, if at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, first of all, it may create extra demand coming from other parts of the world, by moving away from China, although that might create supply glut at some distant point in time. But Japan is definitely benefiting from being in a geopolitically neutral position. And then also, Japan is now a cheap country. So, TSMCs of the world, they can hire high quality engineers at very affordable costs. And also the cost of construction is becoming quite attractive in terms of the cheapness.
Masa, you're a PM for the Hennessy Japan Fund. You mentioned a number of companies in your list, companies like Mitsubishi Electric and Hitachi. What's your best pick at the moment and why?
Well, right now, I think that some of the financials, and by the way, it's not Mitsubishi Electric. We have our own Mitsubishi Corporation and Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group, but we like insurance companies in Japan because it's oligopolistic, three players controlling only three players controlling 90% of the market.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put that as a jumping off point for our next discussion. Masa Takeda there, portfolio manager at Hennessy Japan Fund.
This has been the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast, bringing you the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. Visit the Bloomberg podcast channel on YouTube to get more episodes of this and other shows from Bloomberg. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.